Hello, everybody. Hello, Masters of Your Own Destiny. What's going on? Welcome back to my basement. I'm extremely happy to, of course, to have you back because it's thanks to you and your company and your loyalty that we put the effort, the care, and the love to produce this podcast every other week. And of course, it's also thanks to WCNY, PBS in Central New York, and Central New York Arts that we can come to you every other week. They are our partners who believe in the mission of our podcast and two amazing nonprofit organizations that help us to produce this podcast for you. I want to remind you that you can go and visit fsbasement.com. That is our home in the internet. If you want to listen to past episodes or watch the video for past episode, the entire library is there in fsbasement.com beside really cool educational tools that you can use. So please go and visit fsbasement.com. Follow us in all social media. We are everywhere. So just tap from Suarez Basement. We are in TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. I mean, you name it. We are there and we would love for you to be part of our family. Today, I'm very happy and very glad to have the creator and the lead writer for one of my favorites. And yes, it's true. I have many favorite TV shows, but I truly, truly love this show called Julia in Max. Is a show based in Julia Child's life. And Danielle Goldfarb is in the house, or in this case, in the basement, to talk about script writing, character developing, the business of script writing, but of course also about the show Julia. So thank you for tuning in. Let's start this new conversation with Danielle Goldfarb right away here in front of Suarez Basement. Here you go. Danielle, I want to welcome you to my basement. Thank you so much for agreeing to this conversation.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Are you in New York, right?
I am in New York, yes.
Fantastic. I'm in Syracuse, New York, what we call the real upstate New York.
Yes.
Danielle, I'm excited. I'm very happy and glad to have this conversation with you. I teach script writing for television. It's one of my passions. Is not only to watch TV. I watch, you name it, everything in the stream media. I think I watch it, but I love to discover new talent to the process of script writing, and that's fascinating. I know you also work in that. I just want to start kind of from scratch in the sense: when did you discover that writing was something that you were passionate about it and that you were good about?
So honestly, I've been writing for as long as I can remember. I wrote short stories as a little boy. And then I grew up in Toronto and I went to the high school for the performing arts and I was a drama major. And there was a one act play festival of student written, acted and directed and produced plays. And I wrote a play and it got picked. And I realized sort of right away that I wasn't an actor and that I was a writer. And it was like a real love at first sight. I mean, I really felt it in my bones. I became very, very passionate. I ended up having plays selected 3 years in a row in high school. And then I became determined to study writing, playwriting specifically. So I came, all my siblings had gone to university in Canada, which is much less expensive than university in the United States, but there wasn't such a program that existed at the time in Canada. And I found this dramatic writing program where I'm now on the faculty, where you learned playwriting and screenwriting and dramatic literature and cinema studies. And I got in and, I moved to New York and I never left.
That's such a good story because it's a full circle, right? I mean, you went there for school and suddenly now you are faculty in your own school where you graduate. And that it must feel really surreal, right?
It does. I mean, I've been a part of that place for a long time. So I started teaching not that long after I graduated. But first I was teaching non-majors and then, I was an adjunct faculty and then I started teaching, freshmen and sophomore and intro classes. And slowly I worked my way up. And this summer, actually, I became an associate arts professor and I'm on sabbatical, my first sabbatical. So I'm teaching 1999 and I got my first sabbatical. So
congratulations. That's so exciting. Yes, I'm looking forward for that sabbatical too. But I'm not there yet. I will. Listen, so you teach scriptwriting. You teach, not only you teach, but you write. That's what you do. And of course, we're going to talk about Julia, which is one of my favorite TV shows right now there. But I'm curious to know, in your own experience, through the process of writing, but not only writing, but reading a lot of scripts, what distinguishes a good script from a bad script? What do you think are points that you say, okay, these need to be in the scripting or to consider, for me as an expert in the field, to consider that it's a well-written script?
To me, the thing that most excites me is coming across a new voice, a fresh voice, you know, a story that I feel like, not that, you know, of course, so all stories have basically been told. So it's not like you come up with a story that no one's ever told before, but you're telling it in a new way, in a specific way, that you're accessing your own content, your own experience, your own way of looking at the world. And when you find a fresh voice, it's really exciting. I think the rest of it can be taught. I think you can, I mean, as a teacher, I think you can encourage students and give them exercises to help them access their voices and go to, you know, scarier, deeper, less, you know, stable ground, which I think is important to do as a young writer. And then you can, you know, read and watch and study and learn the fundamentals of dramatic structure that I think, you know, from Aristotle to they still stand, they still work. There are stories that aren't Aristotelian that work, but, you know, there's nothing better than a really good story. So I think we can really help students once they have their voice and once they have sort of figured out who they are and their point of view and what they're confused about, what they're obsessed with, what they're angry about. You know, that's part of the gift of being a young writer. You have something that you want to say. And then, you know, I feel like our job is to help you say it and learn the sort of the tools of dramatic structure, you know, learning about whatever conflict and hero journey and subtext and stakes and story want and story motor. And if you can apply all of that to your voice, then I think you're on the way.
What do you think about students who could say, not only students, any writer out there who could say, well, I'm too young, I don't have the experience to write something deep, to write a characters that have these life experience?
So I don't think that's true. I mean, I feel like, again, the one thing that you bring to your laptop or to the blank page that no one else brings is you. You know, everything else someone else can bring to the computer. So now look, it's easier said than done. Like all of those, you know, amazing phrases like write what you know. Well, what do we know? You know, I mean, it's not like, oh, I know this and I'll write, you know, especially when you're young, you don't know anything, you know what gets you worked up, but again, and you don't want to write something where you know the answers to all the questions before you start writing it. You know, you want to ask tough questions and try and find the answers through writing about it. So I feel like we all have that. And if we can draw from it specifically and truthfully, our work will touch universal chords and will affect people. Mm. And I think a lot of people don't have the confidence to think their life is interesting enough to write about. But I actually think everyone's life is interesting enough to write about.
Mm-hmm. And I think you make a good point. I say to my students also, listen, yes, you are your own individual, but that doesn't mean that you have not experienced certain emotions already. I think it doesn't matter how old you are, you already experienced love and hate and jealousy or rejection, right?
And when you're young, those experiences haven't been like dulled. They're fresh, they're raw. If you're feeling them for the first time, you know, as you get older, you find tools to cope with those feelings. But when you're younger, you don't have those tools yet. So if you can draw from those feelings that you felt, again, it's not about writing autobiographical. It's writing about where you felt. And It's about getting to sort of like the deeper truth of the truth. It's not just, it's not, you know, a television script or a play or a screenplay is not, and shouldn't be like reading your diary. I'm not telling students to just like tell their story. Of course, you know, but take those things that you felt, those passions, those yearnings, those things that you've really like wrestled with, those ideas and those questions that you've struggled with, and explore that in your writing. And if you use some autobiography, great, but then we're also going to give you tools to sort of maybe add conflict and stakes where maybe the stakes weren't as high in real life. So it's that line, it's that delicate balance that you have to find between telling a great story and drawing from your own experiences.
And coming back to my question about what distinguishes a good script from a bad script, My question is more a technical question in the sense that are you, you know, I always say to my students, you need to find a balance. For example, when you do your actions, you're not writing a novel. You cannot use a whole page to describe an action unless it's important for the story. But when you open a script in your own experience that you have plenty, you immediately could say, this is quite a heavy written script technically. What is the things that you feel like, you know, I have a good example in the sense that one of the interviews I did for the podcast, which was fascinating, was interviewing one of the directors of Breaking Bad. And I was talking about the same question. What is a good script? And he said to me, well, I normally like a script where if I only read the dialogues, I don't need to read the action. The dialogues for me is just what it gives me the connection with the script. How about you? What is that you feel, this is a very well-written script?
Well, in visual storytelling, which is television and screenwriting, I personally, and I do it in my own screen and television writing, I feel like you want to hear the voice of the author in the across the page. So I don't think you want the stage direction, you know, the across the page to just feel technical. I think you want to feel the spirit of the show. You want to feel the energy of the show. So when you get to the dialogue, you already know how to read it. You already know the subtext, you know the tone, you know the spirit, the energy of it. So I, you know, in like in old Hollywood scripts, like the across the page really is very, very technical. And I, now again, in your across the page, it's not fiction. It's not prose. You can't write things that the audience isn't going to see, but you can write things that give everyone involved in the script, the actors, the, you know, the cinematographer, the editor, everybody, the director, obviously, a sense of what the spirit, what the tone, what the energy, what the pace is of the script. You don't want your across the page to be fighting what the script is, even if you have all these amazing details. If they're getting in the way of the flow of the script, then they don't belong in the script. Mm. You wanna give the across the page that gives us the gestures, the moments, the subtext that sort of balances the dialogue, that works with or sometimes against the dialogue. You want all of that in the across the page.
Mm. And before we move to Julia, because I'm counting, you know, I have half an hour, so I'm like, okay, I need to be sure that I can talk about Julia. I just freaking love it. But before we go there and we move from this process of script writing and a good script from a bad script and a history of how you start writing, it's the other side, right, which is the business side. It's this idea that, okay, I love to write. I have the talent, I have the tools, I've been able to write. Anybody who is listening to the podcast or any of our students. But the question is always how I reach out, how I pitch, how, because it seems almost impossible, right? It's this idea, well, if I don't live in Hollywood or I'm not connected to somebody, that is really tricky for me to actually pitch my show. Tell me a little bit about your own experience, right? Because you have been working, of course, with Max, HBO Max, or now it's called Max, and other networks. How that process happened, and what is your kind of advice to new writers that are coming out to reach that business aspect of writing?
So I came up as a playwright, and my passion was very much playwriting. And my plays are all pretty personal. And you, I think you get a real sense of my voice in my plays. And I, you know, and I feel like those early scripts that you write, whether it's a play or whether it's a pilot or whether it's a small movie, you want to really convey your voice. I always say to my students, like, my favorite plays are the plays where at the end of the play, I feel like I know the playwright, whether I do or not. That's what I want to feel when I go to the theater. And I think that's what people in Hollywood are looking for when they're or not all people, obviously Hollywood is varied and there's all different, but in terms of the trajectory of my career and the kinds of people that gave me breaks and staffed me in writer's rooms or hired me to write scripts, they were looking for voices. You know, that's not to say they wanted what I wrote to be in my voice, but because I had a voice, they trusted that I could write in a different voice. You know what I mean? This goes back to what we were saying at the beginning of the conversation. It's all about voice. So I think you have to write something that's meaningful to you. Mm. You have to write something that you really care about. And if you really care about it, I feel like someone else will also care about it. And someone else will also have those same passions and will read your script and will find the universal in the specific. And that's how you're going to get your break, as opposed to like writing a genre script that you think the market is looking for. Mm-hmm. I think that's a harder way to get a break. I mean, but now there are definitely people that have gotten breaks that way and that do that kind of writing. I don't do that. You know, no one's hired me to write whatever, an action movie or a Marvel movie. So maybe there are different paths, but I can say the path that worked for me was really investing in my voice and really trying to write things that I would want to watch and that would, and when I'm writing it, I'm like, I'm lost in it. I'm not outside it. I'm inside it. I feel like those scripts, and now that I'm on the other side, you know, with Julia, now that I'm staffing a writer's room, those are the writing samples that I'm looking for, where I feel like, oh my, you know, even if that person's work is nothing like Julia, it's like, wow, this person has a voice. This person has a point of view. This person's really interesting. I want to meet them because they seem like the kind of person that I would want to sit in a room with all day, every day and talk about story.
So, well, let me tell you, I know it sounds like a broken record if you hear this from me before in my podcast, but I think it is important to establish that for me, a good television, good storytelling have four fundamental columns, things I'm looking for. Core writing is the base. You need to have good writing, which in this case, we have a fantastic writer. And today, of course, we have the privilege to be talking with the lead writer, creator of the show. Acting, of course, is important, right? You can have a great story, but if the acting is not convincing me of the emotions, I'm out. Production value and editing. That, for me, is my four things I look in a show. And Julia have the four, for sure. I mean, the production value is fantastic. It's just like, I cannot wait to hear a little more about backstage, how you guys filmed the whole thing. How Julia came to you, meaning this was something that Max came to you and said, we want to develop this story, or you proposed a story?
So neither of those things. So okay. I was on the writing staff of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
That's correct.
And there was a manager at 3 Arts named Kimberly Carver. And she is friends with the man who runs the Julia Child Foundation. And she came up with the idea of doing a show about Julia. But she didn't know what the show would be. She just was like, a show about Julia. Everyone loves Julia. So she was looking for takes. And I love food. The first pilot I ever wrote, I wrote a pilot for CBS about a restaurant critic who reviews restaurants in disguise. I've always wanted to do a food project. So my manager knew that. And I was working on Mrs. Maisel, which was a period show and aspirational and optimistic. And so I was submitted. I'd written a pilot for Showtime all about a marriage and called Genesis. And Kimberly responded to the pilot and she met with me. And then I sort of pitched basically what the show is. Like in a shorthand, I was like, it's The Crown meets Mrs. Maisel. And it's Julia's second act. And it's about the invention of a modern marriage. And it doesn't overlap with the Meryl Streep movie. It's her time in the 60s. It's inventing food television. And I got the job. So that was how that went. Then I brought my friend Chris Kaiser on board to sort of be my partner. And then we had to pitch it to Lionsgate. Lionsgate is a studio, and Lionsgate owns something like 49% of 3Arts. So anything that 3Arts develops, they take to Lionsgate first. So Lionsgate heard the pitch. I mean, I developed a pitch. Lionsgate heard the pitch. They bought it. And then they felt like the best way to try and sell Julia would be with a script, because Julia's like, whatever, it's not Game of Thrones. It's not The Last of Us. There aren't big set action pieces. It's really about the charm of Julia and the company she keeps. So they paid me to write a pilot, and I wrote a pilot, and then we pitched it, and HBO Max bought it. So that's the story.
Very interesting. So you have now the responsibility to write a show that has already been approved about a person that really exists, right? That is when things can become tricky, because you are not creating fictional characters. You're creating, even when a lot of the storylines and characters in Julia are not real, are based in loosely based in Julia Child's life, you still need to, you know, do some research and process. How was that process to say, okay, now I need to know this person very well in order for me to write about?
So the good news about Julia is there's just a lot of information about her. So there's a number of books, including books she wrote herself, including books her nephew wrote. There's a bunch of biographies. There's her sort of autobiography, My Time in France. There's also, of course, all of her interviews in magazines, all her talk show appearances. And then last but not least, there's The French Chef. There's all like 200. Sense of The French Chef. So I could really immerse myself in Julia. And what our mandate was, even that we wanted to get to the kernel of what we felt was the truth of Julia, and the heart of Julia. And we wanted to use all the research, but we were doing what we call the Amadeus version of Julia's life. I don't know if you know the movie Amadeus. It's not necessarily what did happen, but it's what could have happened. I stand by everything that we do on the show could have happened and maybe did happen, but it just hasn't been documented in that way just because of the way history gets written. But nothing, we're not pulling anything out of a hat. All the stories we're telling are rooted in the research. So, for example, we don't know if Julia did the show behind Paul's back. But what we do know is that the Childs did not own a television, that Paul lost his job, that they moved back to Boston and he was forced to retire, that sales of the book were dwindling. And we do know that she went on this show I've been reading and at the last minute brought a copper bowl and eggs and a whisk and made an omelet and accidentally invented food television. We do know that. And we do know that Julia wrote a letter to WGBH proposing a television show. That all exists and that's all fact. What we don't know is that she did it behind Paul's back. And then Paul said, I don't think it's a good idea. And then she had to convince Paul to get on board. And then she carried this secret. And over the course of the season, their marriage evolved into a modern marriage. But I think that could have been what actually happened, right? Knowing where Paul was emotionally. And knowing where society was, that, you know, the idea of a man being retired and his wife going back to work in that time period, and especially because he lost his job in a way that was humiliating to him, and that they were such snobs that they, like, I mean, in 1962, everyone had TVs. They literally didn't own a TV until she got her own TV show. So knowing that made me feel like, I know I'm making this up and it's not in any of the books, but I stand by it. It's all supported in the research. And that's how we did every episode. So everything we do in every episode is all supported in the research, even though we're dramatizing some things.
And again, I mean, listen, you one of the objectives of what you're doing is entertain, right? This is not a documentary about Julia Child. This is a TV Correct. Show, right? So you have to play with the nonfiction.
But something that's been really gratifying is, okay, so the Julia Child Foundation, you know, they're consultants on the show and they've been incredibly supportive. And then especially when season one came out, we heard from so many people that knew Julia and felt like the show and Sarah Lancashire, who brilliantly plays Julia, that we really captured her and that we, because we got to slow the story down, we got to really get into her interior life and the sort of quiet side and the private side of Julia that hasn't been portrayed before. And the people that knew her felt like we, you know, we did her proud. So that was incredibly rewarding that the people that knew Julia, you know, embraced some of the creative fictional choices we made and felt that we were actually getting at a deeper truth, at a real truth.
That's always very good, right? Is it would be worse if it's totally the opposite, right?
Like, yeah, of course, right? Of course, that would have been awful. Yeah.
And were you involved in the casting, Daniel? It was a process that you were a director.
Yes,
involved?
I was absolutely. I mean, the role of Paul was written with David Hyde Pierce in mind. Mm-hmm. You know, Julia was complicated because it was announced we had someone else playing Julia, and then we lost her. And then, you know, there's not a lot of people that can play Julia. And when we lost her, I thought, uh-oh, the whole thing might go away and fall apart. And it was our casting director that put Sarah Lancashire's name on the list. And I knew Happy Valley, which I thought was totally brilliant. I didn't quite know the depth and the body of her work. And everyone at the network was like, Sarah Lancashire, she's amazing. So I started watching Last Tango in Halifax, and then I started reading that she had, you know, played Miss Adelaide in Guys and Dolls in the West End, and that she does musical comedy and she sings. And I was like, oh my God, she can do everything. Because my fear just from Happy Valley, like, she's, you know, it's so heavy. And she's amazing, you know, but like Julia is delightful. And then we met her and she was, you know, and she's delightful. And it's funny, we ended up getting very, very lucky. And
I'm telling you,
actors in the world. So
I'm just blowing away because I was just talking to my husband, which is also a huge fan of the show. We were just fascinated because I say, well, imagine as an actor, you need to now impersonate this person who has a very distinguished voice, this very distinguished mannerisms of how she moves. But at the same time, you need to, as an actor, you have to absorb that information, but you also need to give me emotions and moments of vulnerability. And it has to be very, I'm just fascinated because it's when you're playing a character that is a fictional character for the first time, even when the director and the writer have a sense of who this character is, you don't need to try to force it, in other words, but to adapt yourself to this voice that already exists. And she does it brilliant.
Brilliant. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, she's incredible. Everyone around her, you know, and also she's just a really hard worker. Like she takes it very seriously. Like any in between takes, she's like looking at footage of the real Julia. She's letter perfect on her lines. She's just a pro. Like, yes, she's very present and spontaneous, but she's also very prepared. And because she worked so hard and because David worked so hard, everybody else worked just as hard. And I think that's why I feel like we have like the best ensemble out there. Like they're all, everyone sort of stepped up and everyone did their characters proud. And yeah, I love all of them.
I love it. And you can see there's a great chemistry between all of them. It's a scene that just jumped my mind, but I think it's the moment that they bring the new refrigerator to set. And, you know, it's the advertising placement in the set. And they're asking her to open the fridge a little slower. And I just cried. Her face is just like, oh, my God, this woman is brilliant. It's just.
She's brilliant. I just love her. I think for her to, like, because in the UK, she's so often played the heavy, like these like really intense dramatic parts. And she's really funny and really skillful. And again, I feel like, she's also given Julia a real gravitas and which I feel very lucky. And so much of that I think comes from her, like being so protective of Julia and making sure that was there. But man, she can do the comedy and do the physical comedy and her impulses are great.
Daniel, it's a pleasure to meet you. I wish you only the best. Hopefully this will not be the last time that we see each other. But I do appreciate your company and thank you for being in from Suarez Basement.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was really great. Really fun to talk to you and to meet with you.
And this is all for this time. This is Julia Child. Bon appetit.